Murder in the Red Barn is a third book from Essex author Peter Maggs. Once again, he's taken his meticulous research and brought to life another incredible true story. This time, it's the story of a murder of Maria Martin by William Corder. Now, as usual, all is not so cut and dried as we experience through the revelations in this book, and Peter is here today. Good afternoon to you, Peter. Good to see you.
Good afternoon, Tony.
Anybody that would see me in a coffee shop recently would have seen me holding this book in my hands.
Excellent.
Which I'm really enjoying once again, Peter. Yeah. Congratulations. Let's start at the very beginning with our two main people in this book, who are, as I mentioned there, Maria Martin and William Corder. Let's talk about them. Who were they, first of all?
Well, Maria, it was, the name was pronounced Maria. It was the it was the old English way rather than the Latin, Maria.
Yeah.
She was the daughter of the mole catcher of Polstead. She was a country girl, attractive. She'd been around. She'd had well, she had two illegitimate children by the time, by two different fathers by the time she met William. She liked nice clothes, and her two previous lovers had been fairly well to do. One of them was William Corder's older brother, in fact. So they were fairly wealthy, and they were able to give her the things she needed. She met William. William was the younger, the last but one younger son of a wealthy farmer in Polstead. He was a little bit of a rake, you know. He also he went around the block, as it were, with the local girls. Allegedly, he made one of them pregnant, although it's not absolutely clear. At any rate, they got together. They started having an affair. They used to meet in the Red Barn. She became pregnant. He arranged for her to go to Sudbury, which was about eight miles away. He didn't want his family, his mother and his brothers and sisters, to know what was going on. So Maria went away. She had the baby there. She came back, but the baby died a few weeks later. Some people say he murdered it, but in fact her parents said it was weakly and it was suffering from fits. And then they the baby was never baptised, and because they didn't want the authorities to know, they basically went out and buried it in the fields. And then they decided to get married. Quite why? Well, I guess they you know, they were attracted by each other. They William was worried that his mother and his the rest of his family would know what was going on. So he had Maria dress up in men's clothing in disguise and walk to meet him in the Red Barn, and then they were going to drive to Ipswich and get married. And that was the last time anybody saw her alive. Mm.
So we are talking about Murder in the Red Barn by Essex author Peter Maggs today. 1 year before the establishment of the Metropolitan Police, the trial and conviction of William Corder is brought to the page, with many questions left unanswered in a story that gripped the people of Essex and Suffolk back in 1828. So we're going back a bit here, Peter, with this one. And again, going back to that research we were talking about, let's talk a little bit about the geography. This was set, you say, in Polstead, but there's an awful lot of things that happen, for instance, in Colchester and around our area, basically, isn't there?
Yes, that's right. The one of the factors at the time, William Corder was suspected of this murder of his girlfriend, Maria, but there was a dodgy character around Polstead called Beauty Smith, who was he'd been convicted of animal thieving and various other things. He was extraordinary. He was sentenced to be transported three times. The first time he served out his time on the hulks in the Thames. Second time he did go to Australia, but when he'd done his 7 years, he came back. And then he was transported again for the third time, and that was for life. But that all happened in Colchester. So he spread his thieving around Suffolk and Essex, you know. So there was a moderately local connection. Yes. So what happened here was that we left Maria and William on their way to the Red Barn, and then she was never seen again. And William was working on the family farm, which by that time was pretty much his, because his father and other brothers had died. And he told Maria's parents that, oh, actually, there was a problem with the wedding, with the marriage license. She was living in Ipswich, or living with a friend of his, and she couldn't write because she had a bad hand. And then later on, he went south for his health. He ended up in London. And he wrote to them saying, oh, yes, now they were married. She was living on the Isle of Wight and she hadn't written because she was too busy. And then he advertised for a wife.
And, yes, now this bit's extraordinary. When I got to this bit, I thought, hang on a second. You know, one minute you're supposedly with this girl, the next minute you're actually advertising for a wife, yeah. Which of course he finds. But what's interesting about this is that this was a common practice.
Yes, it was. I found the advertisement that he put in, and looking back the previous 3 months, there were several other advertisements. Now, most of them were from, well, middle-aged gents with a moderate income looking for a woman who had a private, or just who was able to support herself, you know, for companionship. But funnily enough, about 4 or 5 months earlier, there'd been this strange advertisement, and William picked out some of the phrases and the sentences, and he reproduced them verbatim. But his command of English and punctuation and spelling was not great. So the advertisement that was that appeared would have been clear to anybody that, you know, he wasn't a terribly well-educated man. Mm. But nevertheless, 100 women responded to the advertisement. And 7 days after he met one of them, they were married.
Yeah.
And she was a school teacher, and they moved to Ealing, which is where I grew up.
Right.
Which is one of the reasons I got so interested in this case and opened a school.